installment of Weather Ready or Not. I'm Becky Elliott.
And I'm Dakota Smith.
This is my first episode, so I hope you guys like it. This episode is going to be about Hurricane / Superstorm Sandy. It had a couple of different names, I think even Frankenstorm at one point because it was near Halloween. It impacted the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast in October of 2012. For purposes of this show, we're going to focus on Sandy's impacts in New Jersey and along the Jersey Shore.
There were a lot of moving pieces with Sandy, both meteorologically and logistically. So let's start with an overview of Sandy. First off, you picked a gigantic topic to discuss. Literally, Sandy was one of the biggest storms on record. At its largest, how big was Sandy?
According to Wikipedia, it became the largest Atlantic hurricane on record. They're measured by diameter, and the winds spanned 1,100 miles.
Wow, so with this big of a storm, people must have taken precautions fairly early on. Can you give us a general timeline of the preparations for the storm?
So everyone I've talked to said they first started hearing about Sandy about midweek before the storm hit, and it hit on a Monday. Preparations began really in sincerity on Friday, October 26th. Officials in Cape May County advised residents on Barrier Islands to evacuate. Keep in mind that's just an advisory, not an actual mandatory evacuation. Then voluntary evacuation for a lot of shore communities began shortly after that. By Sunday, the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, ordered all residents of Barrier Islands from Sandy Hook up to Cape May to evacuate and then actually closed Atlantic City casinos. Tolls were suspended, so people were free to leave without paying a toll. And then President Obama actually signed an emergency declaration for New Jersey, allowing the state to request federal funding and other assistance for actions taken before Sandy's landfall. That's a pretty big deal. When that happens, an emergency declaration declared before the disaster has hit, you know it's going to be serious.
Yeah, so it sounds like there was a ton of prep beforehand. So where were the impacts actually felt? When and where did Sandy make landfall?
So early on October 29th, which again was a Monday, Sandy curved north-northwest, took that left turn, left hook, very infamous, and then moved ashore near Brigantine, New Jersey, which is just to the northeast of Atlantic City. At this time, it was technically classified as a post-tropical cyclone, but it had hurricane-force winds on Monday evening. While moving ashore at Atlantic City, Sandy dropped heavy rainfall that reached 11.62 inches in Wildwood Crest, which is, I think, just south of Atlantic City. At landfall, the highest recorded wind gust in the state was 90 miles per hour at a station just across the border from Staten Island, New York. So that's interesting, because that's quite a ways north of where the heaviest rainfall was. That just goes to show how large Sandy was and how large the wind field of the storm was.
Obviously, the National Weather Service and National Hurricane Center were forecasting for this. What kind of warnings did they issue for New Jersey in advance of Sandy?
So that's where it gets interesting. Although tropical storm conditions were inevitable and hurricane force winds were likely, the National Hurricane Center did not issue any tropical cyclone watches or warnings for New Jersey because Sandy was forecast to become extratropical before landfall and thus would not be a tropical cyclone. There were, however, high wind warnings issued.
So it's kind of a weird scenario, and it's a scenario that the National Hurricane Center has since planned for. But sticking to this event, what kind of impact did the non-tropical, tropical weirdness have on the public's reaction to Sandy?
It's a really good question, and it's one that I discuss with every single person that I interviewed for this podcast. So we'll get into that a little bit later in the podcast, but let me just say their insight is invaluable.
Right, and you actually had the opportunity to visit New Jersey and talk with some of these residents, and I can't wait to hear that.
I started vacationing on Long Beach Island, New Jersey in 2014, thanks to my fiancé and his family. It's a favorite place of theirs to vacation. During my first visit there, I noticed a lot of businesses had pictures of their buildings during the height of the flooding during Sandy. Many even listed how high the water had come, almost like a badge of honor. And to some, I think it absolutely is. They went through one of the worst storms in recorded history and came back and rebuilt their livelihood. It's a testament to the human spirit. The seaside communities on Long Beach Island, also called LBI, were among the hardest hit. Scores of homes and businesses were destroyed, and the storm surge deposited up to 4 feet of sand on island streets, making them impassable. The mandatory evacuation went out on October 28th, but residents and business owners were prohibited from returning until November 10th. There were no fatalities thought to have occurred on LBI. Preliminary damage estimates were between $750 million and $1 billion on the island alone. I spent a week in Beach Haven earlier this month and had the opportunity to chat with a local business owner and her experience with Sandy. We went to play a game of miniature golf and ended up having a riveting conversation with the owner of Mr. T's Miniature Golf. Karen Rosania owns the business now, which has two locations on LBI. The business has been in her family for 43 years, since the early 70s. She lives in a house adjacent to one of the golf courses. Because of extenuating family circumstances, Karen had little notice about Sandy. She had enough time to get back and take smaller items up off the floor, but the heavy arcade machines had to stay. As it turns out, they didn't stand a chance anyway. Mr. T's on Bay Ave recorded 44 inches of water in the building. 44 inches. It's more than halfway to the ceiling. Karen said that when she returned after Sandy, water had wreaked havoc on the courses. The water had acted like a vortex, ripping up golf course features and displacing them everywhere. I've seen pictures from the height of Sandy, of businesses and buildings that I've visited since the storm. It's been just about 4 years, and on many parts of the island, you would never know that a devastating storm had occurred. But every local you talk to has a story, and they're all remarkable. I asked Karen what she would have done differently the second time around, and she had some really good insight. Her biggest piece of advice was to get where you were going to be safe. Don't think that you can save your property. You can't. She would have a checklist now of things to take care of before evacuating. Things like stocking up on canned food, buying water, buying gas, and moving vehicles to higher locations. Another point that Karen mentioned that I had not thought of was electricity. It obviously shut off without notice during Sandy, so many switches were still in the on position. When the power finally came back on, days, even weeks later, those switches being on caused electrical sparks and started fires. To prevent this, people should turn the main breakers off. Tropical storms and nor'easters don't really faze many on the island. They've been through so much. Hopefully, nothing like Sandy ever occurs again. I had the opportunity to learn about the impacts of the storm as much as 35 to 45 miles inland. I spoke with my fiancé's parents, Dave and Jean DePodwin, who were home in Bernardsville, New Jersey, at the time of Sandy. I asked when they first heard about the storm and when they knew how severe it had the potential to be. They knew by Wednesday that a storm was coming, but people were still skeptical. By Sunday, tones of forecasters had started to sound quite dire, and it became clear that it was a much more urgent matter, and they started getting into the mode of preparation. They expected a lot of rain and took everything up off of the basement floor. Irene, the year before, had produced a lot of rain. They got water, stocked up on gas in the cars, and put water in the bathtub. The worst of the storm hit Monday night, and the winds were fierce. They guessed around 80 miles per hour. I double-checked. In that area, there were wind speeds between 70 and 80 miles per hour recorded between 8 p.m. and midnight. Dave said it sounded like a freight train, something we commonly hear about tornadoes, or even a screaming sound. At one point, they called their son Dan, who was also a meteorologist, and held the phone up to the window so that he could hear the winds. He was looking at radar and didn't like what he saw. He recommended that they get into the basement, and soon. They were only down there for maybe 10 to 20 minutes before the first trees came crashing down. I asked if and when they would have gone to the basement had they not had the information from Dan. Not everyone has a meteorologist for a son.
If he hadn't told you to go to the basement, say he wasn't a meteorologist, how do you think you would have gotten the information and then taken shelter?
I think the wind would have encouraged us to go, because
Okay.
radio or no radio, it was something you don't normally. Spruce trees on the side of the house were 40 feet tall on the top, or 60 feet tall on the top, 20 feet of both of them snapped off like matchsticks. So any pine trees would just, the top sections literally snap like tinder.
Dave and Jean ended up staying in the basement throughout the overnight. When they came up the next morning, Jean says they were surprised at the extent of the damage. It reminded her of tornado damage. Your neighborhood doesn't look anything like you remembered it looking. The impacts were very severe, said Jean. Significant tree damage was on their property, but they were fortunate nothing hit their house. 60 to 80-year-old trees came down and split, landing on either side of the property. It barricaded them in. They could back out of the driveway, but they couldn't go up or down the street. They had heard these trees crashing down all night long. Their neighbors across the street were not as fortunate. They had a tree land on part of their house and flattened a car.
Neighbors rallied with chainsaws to cut our way out of our driveways and homes because it was impassable.
They were stuck at the house 24 hours, but it could have been much longer if they had depended on emergency services. They were busy doing other things, so the neighbors rallied together to free themselves up. When they could leave their neighborhood the next day, they went to see Dave's mother in a senior living facility about a half an hour to the north. All residents in the facility had their doors open to let in whatever little light they could, since the electricity was out. They had heard nothing. They had no idea what was going on in the outside world, had no idea the extent of the damage from Sandy. As they walked by, people would ask, "What's going on? Please fill us in." They were without power for 7 to 8 days, and there was only one working elevator. I asked them what was the most surprising thing about Sandy. They said the winds were worse than they were anticipating. The left hook surprised people. It ended up cutting a swath right through central Jersey. And in that path, through central New Jersey, were thousands of old trees.
In any area with a predominance of old trees, a lot of concentration of trees, like Burnetsville, got hit extremely hard.
The power was out in Bernardsville for 12 days, and this meant there was no heat. The house got down to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. They bought a generator the following week, about 200 miles from the coast. You weren't able to find one within 200 miles. In hindsight, they said they would have done a few things differently, and one of them was having a generator ahead of time. They also would have gone to the basement sooner and not tested fate. As we mentioned before, during Sandy, there were no tropical storm warnings issued by the National Weather Service. There were flood watches and warnings, high wind watches and warnings, and coastal flooding watches and warnings issued. My last question centers around this issue.
Would any of your decisions changed had there been tropical warnings issued?
Jean felt that a high wind warning didn't raise it to the level of concern that was warranted for Sandy. However, it might now after having gone through that storm. She feels that the label of a tropical storm or hurricane does alert the non-meteorological consumer to start paying attention and does raise awareness that something serious is potentially coming down the line. I felt like this was really valuable insight and a lesson that we could definitely learn from. People need the words tropical, hurricane to really take storms like Sandy seriously, even if they're considered extratropical or post-tropical. My final Sandy interview came from Bill McKim, a resident and prominent photographer in Bellmawr, New Jersey. He's lived in his Oceanside house since 1990 and has weathered, pun intended, many storms there, including the Nor'easter of 1992 and Hurricane Irene the year before Sandy. Bill's house was built in 1872, so it's seen a lot of storms.
But I was, without a doubt, very concerned about it on Friday, Thursday and Friday. We could see that the ocean was starting to, that there was a storm on the way. In fact, they even got photos from all of that.
Bill ended up leaving town on Saturday, but returned on Sunday to get a few more things from the house because it looked like the storm was going to be really bad. He asked his wife if there was anything she wanted because this might take out the town, were his words.
So what preparations did you take in terms of protecting your house and your property?
So I took the property that was most important to me, and being I'm a photographer, I took my computers, my external hard drives. I got all that stuff out. Even though it was on the third floor of the house, I wasn't convinced that it was a safe place for it to be. Between possibly the roof coming off the house and just who knows what was going to happen with the water or. So I got that out. We boarded up the windows on Friday into the night. I know that, like we were doing it in the darkness, and we did all the ocean facing east windows, the north windows, and the south windows. We didn't do the west because really there's no reason to. But we didn't think of boarding up the basement windows. And so when the storm hit and the boardwalk broke away, large pieces of the boardwalk came across the street into our front yard alongside the house, and a couple of them went through the basement window and put the contents of the ocean into my basement to the ceiling.
When Bill returned the following day to assess the damage, he convinced himself that he had to be prepared to see his house off of the foundation. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. However, the glass on his front porch blew out, the boardwalk was against his front door, and there was a lot of sand and debris on the front porch. That wasn't the worst of it, though.
And then I opened up the door to the basement just to see what that was going to be, and was totally shocked to see what looked like the ocean at the top step of my basement. And I just looked at it and said, "Oh my gosh," and just closed it. And I said, "I've got major problems."
Bill felt like he was pretty prepared for the storm, thanks to the people he followed on social media. He had a lot of trusted weather sources, Gary Sitkowski being one of them. Gary was working for the National Weather Service Mount Holly at the time, and is famous for issuing the plea for people to leave before Sandy. I'll read that now. Quote, "If you are still reluctant to evacuate, think about your loved ones. Think about the emergency responders who will be unable to reach you when you make the panic phone call to be rescued. And think about the rescue and recovery teams who will recover your remains if you do not survive. If you think the storm is overhyped and exaggerated, please err on the side of caution. You can call me up on Friday and yell at me all you want. I will tell you in advance, I will be very happy that you are alive and well, no matter how much you yell at me. End quote. Gary even included his cell phone number so anyone who evacuated could call him if he was wrong.
I've lived here since 1990. I've never left. The year before happened to be Irene, and I stayed for that only because the high tide and the brunt of the storm was predicted to be daytime. So I kind of figured between my own little weather station on the roof of my house giving me the wind speed and being able to visually see what's going on, I'd have an idea if, you know, if that was getting worse than, you know, than what I was willing to stay for. But I had told my wife, literally, I said, our son, you know, she wanted to stay, you know, because everybody wants to see a storm. You know, nobody wants to see something as big as Sandy, but everybody thinks they want to see a big storm. And so I said to her, look, I'll stay with you. We'll stay. I said, but there's no way he's staying.
Despite attempts to get them to leave, Bill's neighbors decided to stay through Sandy. In hindsight, it wasn't the best decision.
Being my neighbor next door had stayed for Irene, and I said, look, this is going to be a lot worse than Irene. I said, I stayed last year, too. I said, but I'm leaving, and I'm just telling you, you should not stay. And she stayed, and she got the life scared out of her.
Bill ended up losing power Sunday morning. Thankfully, his weather station ran on solar power and had a backup battery.
So your main source of weather information was social media and the National Weather Service. Is there any other place that you received weather information leading up to Sandy?
You know, definitely, definitely as the storm got within, I would say, a day or two out, when the New York television started really starting to pay attention to it, you know, I was following that, but the National Weather Service and basically Twitter and reading a couple guys' websites of people who, you know, maybe even just hobbyists that really follow this stuff and could explain to somebody like myself, like some of the terminology that you guys use that kind of goes over the average person's head, ex-tropical storm, you know, like that to me just, when you say something is X, you just, so that sounds less.
When you say something is X, it sounds less. What a huge takeaway for meteorologists with Sandy. Hopefully it was. Saying extratropical, post-tropical, it diminishes the severity of a storm, at least to the general public. And Bill isn't even your average general public person. He's informed.
The fact that there weren't tropical warnings or watches or hurricane warnings issued for the coast, have any impact on your decision?
I think it absolutely impacted the woman who lived next door and her roommate and the people who lived. So the house next to me happens to be three stories. It's more of a rental type of house. So she was renting the first floor. The people next door to that were in a Cape Cod house. But the three houses next to me, they all stayed. I didn't know the other people even to really talk to them. But I had told the lady next door and it just, you know, she just seemed like, you know, yeah, I'm going to stay. I'll be fine. And, you know, I tried telling her like, look, I've lived here 25 years. I've never left. I'm leaving. But, I think it definitely affected her because when that storm came and the water came up to the house, she had to break the door of the staircase to the second floor at 70 something years old to get onto the staircase because they were convinced, you know, that the water was going above the first floor of the houses.
That's a big takeaway right there. His elderly neighbor didn't have the same access to social media that he had. She only casually followed it. Bill says that she later told him that she thought she was going to die. Her unwillingness to leave could have been due to not being as informed. It also could have been due to lack of understanding of the warnings that were issued. Bill had some insight into that.
I think that's the biggest thing is that people don't understand some of the warnings you guys give out. I think the National Weather Service and the people in your business need to be more plain spoken to people when stuff is really serious. I think they need to come off of thinking that everybody understands some of the terminology that, you know, that you guys use. That maybe sometimes could be more, just more plain spoken, you know, or just using other storms as a barometer. Just saying, you know.
So that is helpful, you know, to you then, to compare.
Oh, absolutely.
He also suggested another name for post-tropical or extratropical cyclones. I got a good laugh out of it.
You know, when they do those 5-6-page reports, I do read them. Those PDFs that come out from the Weather Service. Yeah. Yeah, and I think they're more plain spoken to get you really to understand stuff. But I think sometimes when they use, you know, tropical, extratropical, I don't even know what they're talking about. Yeah. Like, you know, just say like baby hurricane.
Baby.
What size hurricane are we having? Right. Just under a hurricane or why was it a hurricane in Virginia? But all of a sudden when it's sitting off of us, we're no longer calling it a hurricane. And I think people definitely would have said, well, it's not a hurricane anymore. I'm like, yeah, but it's 900 miles wide. I don't care what they're calling it.
Bill is a very informed person and utilized social media to its fullest extent. He had trusted weather sources, and that really worked out in his favor. He was one of the most prepared people when it came to Sandy. After talking with all of these people with very different perspectives of Sandy, I felt there were three main takeaways. Number one, terminology matters. Words like extratropical and post-tropical confuse the public. They make it seem like the storm is no longer as severe as it once was, if it's no longer being called a Category 1 hurricane or a tropical storm. Also, tropical storm and hurricane warnings do have more of an impact than a high wind warning. High wind warnings seem more short-fused, and they don't have as much lead time. If people hear the word tropical or hurricane, it makes them want to act and prepare, because they know that the impacts from those can be devastating. People are also more likely to react and prepare much more effectively if they've experienced a significant storm in the past. For Bill, he experienced the 1992 nor'easter and Hurricane Irene the year before. After living through those storms, he swore he would never stay for another tropical storm or hurricane, and says he is very glad that he left during Sandy, and was glad he wasn't there to experience that wind and to see his basement filling up with water. For Long Beach Island and the rest of the Jersey Shore, I don't think life will ever be the same after Sandy. The barrier islands flood regularly, and it's a way of life for people there. When the high tide rises, so does the water in the streets. But I think Sandy had a much more significant impact on people. It's hard to ignore 3.5 feet of water. It took several years for people to fully recover from the storm, and some places never did. I think, and I hope, that it's helped people to want to be more prepared, to have a checklist, to pay more attention to watches and warnings, and know when they should evacuate, and to take those evacuation orders very seriously. The last point that I took away is that social media and blogs are great tools for people who are interested in learning more about storms. Whether it be a National Weather Service meteorologist, a private sector meteorologist, your local TV weather meteorologist, or a trusted source on Twitter, utilize all of these sources when it comes to preparing for significant weather events. In the end, how you are impacted by and recover from significant weather events is up to you. So prepare, react, evacuate if you need to. Just make sure you have all the information that you possibly can at your fingertips to make the best decision possible.
That's going to do it for this episode of Weather Ready or Not. This episode was written by Becky Elliott. It was produced by myself and Becky. And thanks for everyone for sharing your stories about Sandy. They really mean a lot to us, and I think we learned a lot about them. Our next episode of Weather Ready or Not will be on Hurricane Matthew and the evacuation process and some of the aftermath that the Southeast Coast dealt with after that storm went through there. You can send us an email if you have a question about the episode at theweatherjunkies@gmail.com. Send us a tweet on Twitter at @thewxjunkies, or find us on Facebook. And then you can listen to this podcast on SoundCloud, YouTube, iTunes, or on our website, theweatherjunkies.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time.